Welcome to the She Founds podcast. In today's episode, I'm joined by Anshika Arora, founder of Eternity UK, the UK's first South Asian wedding planning app, which she launched in 2022. In today's episode, Anshika shares her journey of moving from a corporate career in finance to becoming a tech entrepreneur. She shares her initial steps of turning her idea into a tech product, and she shares her experiences of navigating the challenges of coming from a non-tech background. She also talks about her strategies for managing the highs and lows of entrepreneurship, as well as providing some practical advice to aspiring founders. Welcome, Anshika.
Thank you for having me. How are you today?
I'm good. It's so wonderful to have you on this episode because we've been talking for a while since we met, and I'm glad that you're finally here.
Yes, no, likewise. It's really exciting because obviously we met a number of months ago.
Yeah.
And since then, been back and forth. And so I'm glad that we're finally here doing this.
Let's first begin by introducing you. Do you mind giving a brief introduction to your background and what's brought you to the point where you are now?
Definitely. So I actually started off in finance. So I started off at HSBC Private Banking and graduated university. Well, did my summer internship there, graduated university, kind of followed the natural path, did my grad scheme, then was there for about 2.5 years. And it was really great. Absolutely loved the role, loved the people I worked with. But for me, I really wanted to always do something else and go into my own business. I think I've always had that itch since I was younger. And then around COVID time, that's when I came across a problem in the wedding industry when my sister was getting married, and just learned how fragmented and offline the industry actually is. And COVID meant that everyone was thinking of starting something new, have like business plans getting left, right and center. And so that's exactly when I decided to think about the business and what it would look like. And then eventually left my role, took Eternity full time, and now I'm in the tech space. So it's quite an interesting space to be in, quite a switch from finance to tech, but it's been a great journey so far.
I'd love to dive into some parts of that journey a little bit more. You come from a non-tech background. How has that transition been for you? First of all, you've got to learn a new domain area, which is the wedding industry. And then second of all, you have to figure out how to build a tech product.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I went into it quite blind. A lot of founders will say that if I know what I knew now about the industry, maybe I wouldn't have done it at the time. And I think that's definitely the case for me because there was just such a steep learning curve. But I'm so glad that I didn't know any of it at the time. And I'm so glad that I've gone through this learning curve. And for me, I can be quite an impatient person, which is a really good thing when it comes to business, because it means for me, it's like, cool, I've got an idea. I remember vividly, I was making sketches. I was actually, I think I had COVID at the time as well. So I was stuck in my room. I was isolating away from my family. And I remember I was drawing out what would this product look like. And I'm a really visual learner. So for me, that was a big thing where I tried to think, okay, well, if I'm going to be my ideal customer, my dream user, how will this product look? And I think with tech, that's such a big thing. It's such a big part of our daily lives nowadays that if you can build something that you will use, and we're building a product for Gen Z, then I think that's enough of a tick box. So I think a lot of my learning happened from, there were moments in my journey where I'd say, actually, will I use this? And if the answer was yes, then we found a way to do it, as opposed to Googling different types of code or what's the right way to build in tech or anything like that. For us, everything has always been very consumer driven.
Thank you for sharing that. I think it would be good to take our listeners through the journey of going from idea, going step by step to the point where you actually had a real product.
Yep. So for us, it was me sketching a storyboard. I think my first draft was very bare and very bland, but sketching out what we think our product should look like. Then doing bare bits of research, going on Upwork, going on Fiverr, thinking, okay, how do you actually find developers and where do you find them? Having a couple of conversations, and then we hired someone. At this time, the business was bootstrapped. So that was really interesting for me to do, to try and align it to different budgets, to think, okay, from a return perspective, how will we be making our money? What does this mean? And doing the financial modeling. And I have a business management background from my university degree. So I kind of knew the bare basics of marketing and sales and finance and how does that all come together. But our from idea to product, it was definitely sketching, speaking to developers, and then using social media to really see, okay, well, what's out there at the moment? What content do people like to consume? And then it went to product launch and thinking, okay, how can we market it? For us, we've always been a B2B2C product, which means that we've always had two different strategies on the go for our wedding professionals as well as our wedding couples. So that's been really interesting to see, okay, how can we differentiate our strategy? And as we'll get into as well in the journey, we've had pivots and turns across the way, which have been quite fun as well.
What would you say have been the main challenges that you faced during this journey?
Yeah, I think my biggest challenge was definitely building a tech product with a non-tech background. I still remember being on calls with developers in the early days and learning the bare basics and then just sitting on the side and Googling or making notes to things that I wanted to Google afterwards. And I think that was, again, like I said, a very steep learning curve. But what we've done so far to help overcome it, which has been great, is actually getting on board a tech advisor. And I think that's just been such a crucial step for us, especially as we're in our current stage of pivoting. To have someone who's an SME in the field and bringing them on board has just been great.
So you had an idea and you got something built. What was that first version that you had built?
Yeah, so our first version, which we first launched, was a directory model. So essentially pay to feature from the supplier side, and then our margins grew through advertising. So if suppliers wanted to be seen more on our socials or featured higher up or wanted dedicated blog posts and SEO, then they paid an extra amount per quarter. And that was our model. And that was a good model and it worked really well, but it's not the most scalable model in my perspective. You need kind of masses and volumes and a lot more to it, which we probably weren't getting because we were in a niche space of the South Asian industry. So what we were doing was very community driven and not so much at scale level. And I think now it's been great to pivot into a space where actually we're going for a more scalable business model, which is a SaaS model. So monthly subscriptions, and we're offering a different product. So we've gone from digital publication / directory into the software space.
Great. That sounds really interesting. So we'll definitely get more into that pivot. In hindsight, is there anything that you would have done differently in the early stages?
Oh, that's an interesting one. I don't want to be a cliche and say I wouldn't change everything, well, anything, but I think it comes down to every single mistake I've made has probably taught me not to make that mistake again. And I've learned from it really well. I think one thing that I could tell myself I wish I did sooner was speak to more solo founders. Being a solo founder myself, sometimes you can come across problems or get so siloed into your own business that you don't end up bouncing ideas off of people as you would if you had a large team. And I think when you're bootstrapped, a lot of founders will be able to relate to this. For me, it would definitely be speak to more solo founders, because even in this past week, for example, we've come across different problems, but now I have a network of people where I can just go to them and say, hey, by the way, have you come across this? And all of our problems have been solutionized in a much quicker way, because it's not just my brain working on it. It's someone who's maybe doing the same thing adjacent to us, come across it and then overcome it, and vice versa. We just bounce ideas off of each other.
Can you give us an example of what some of those questions that you might throw out to other founders might look like?
Yeah, so I think it's the bare basics, even when it comes to things like hiring sales staff and just having questions. CK, I'm thinking of doing this kind of a commission model or a tiered structure. How has that worked for you? And I think it's those kind of things you can't really Google them, because Google doesn't really give you an answer. It's quite a big decision to make and then make a mistake on it, because it's obviously an employee and you have responsibilities and there's legalities around it. But then just speaking to another founder to say, hey, this is what I've done. This is what didn't work. This is what did work. That's just been really helpful.
That curiosity. How did you go about building your network of founders and building those relationships where you could just ask questions?
Yeah, networking events. Well, even we met at networking events.
Yes, we did. Actually.
And I think they're so helpful and they're so powerful. And you definitely go through phases where you could get networking event fatigue. And so it's really important to be aware of that. I know that I kind of do it in bursts, where I'll have a few weeks where I'll go to loads, and then I have a few weeks where I'm like, do you know what? I need a bit of a break. And it's just about going to ones that you know you resonate with, whether it be the topic, whether it be the speakers, whether it be the people in the community that's putting those on. I definitely have some communities where I love to go to all of their events because I can really resonate to them. I have others where I love the speakers, and so I'll go just to see the speakers. I think the one that we were at, I'd been following the speakers for a while, and so I actually didn't know anyone there when we'd met. But then you build your network through that, and then yeah, it's just great.
So let's move on to talking about how you got your first customer. I think that's quite important. In the beginning, you mentioned that you were more of a directory. How did you go about getting people onto your directory?
Yeah, so it was a combination of my own network / my family's network, and then also a combination of cold emailing and cold messaging. And I think that combination worked really well. And sometimes it's very easy to shy away from talking about your own network or leveraging off of people that you know or you've come across. But for me, that was just a big growth in my journey, has been people that we met, say, through planning my sister's wedding, or people who are friends with my parents who are in the industry already, and really learning about the industry through them because they're established in it already. And then on the flip side, also doing my own kind of cold calling, cold emailing, cold Instagram DMing. That's how we got our first, I want to say, 30 suppliers before we launched, because we launched with 30 suppliers on there. And it was a range of new businesses and it was a range of established businesses, which was quite nice for us, because a big ethos when we started the platform was around leveling the playing field. So whether you've been in the industry for 20 plus years or whether you've been in the industry for under 2 years, a couple could come on board and essentially compare and contrast the two without the vanity metrics, like how many followers do you have on Instagram, or how many comments do you get on your Instagram post, or what's your Google SEO like. So for us, that was it. It was a combination of tapping into your own network, leveraging that because it's really important too, and then cold outreach.
Great. And you're a B2B2C model. So how did you get the wedding searchers, people that are organizing the wedding, your end customer, how did you get them to come on board?
Yeah, so it was two things. We did online and offline. So we aligned our launch with one of the larger wedding exhibitions, which was great because that meant that we had then marked our presence with suppliers, but then also had footfall of couples walking through, and they were our first customers. Then off the back of that, social media, we always say we're a platform built by Gen Z for Gen Z. And so social media, Instagram, TikTok, Pinterest has been major for us in growing. And we haven't ever spent a single penny. So we haven't done any paid advertising online. And all of it's been organic, which has been great because it's a lot more authentic, seeing what resonates with the audience and building that community quite naturally.
Amazing. Did you have a specific number of customers in the beginning when you were like, is this going to work? Is it not going to work? Did you have targets for customers?
Yeah, it's difficult to set targets before launch because you never really know how someone's going to take it, and you never know if your targets are too ambitious or under ambitious, or at least that was my personal experience. For us, it was around the time that we'd hit over 1,000 couples. That's when I was like, okay, do you know what? We've built something which has been really valuable and is helping the community. And I think that's when we did a bit of a strategy refresh to say, okay, let's start getting our feedback now at this point and just see what's working well, what can be dropped, what can be enhanced before we go to the next stage.
1,000 couples is a lot. It's a strong indicator, I think.
So I think it was around 1,000 couples. And when we had about 400 suppliers, that's when we went into, okay, what's next mode, as opposed to just let's see if this works mode.
So you mentioned earlier that your product has been through a pivot. And I think you've mentioned before that you've been through many pivots. Let's talk about some of those pivots. And for our listeners today, let's begin by just explaining what a pivot is, because I think sometimes when you're in the tech bubble, we tend to use all sorts of words that potentially nobody will know what they mean. So let's just talk about what a pivot is.
When you go out and you have one idea in mind, and then due to whichever reason, whether it be data, feedback, money, funding, whatever it is, you choose to change that path of direction in the hopes that you will achieve your desired outcome in a better way, essentially. So that's what a pivot is. For us, we started off with baby pivots, kind of introducing new products and seeing if that was a good upsell, whether consumers or suppliers would take to them. So like advertising was one of our upsell products, which did really well. in the middle, we tried to launch a membership rewards club, which worked okay for us, but we realized it probably wasn't the ideal upsell. So a lot of learnings came with that. But our biggest pivot has definitely been when we hit that mark of around 1,000 customers and around 400 suppliers, where we thought, you know what, let's get the data. And the data really drove us to the point of view to thinking that our initial problem statement was that it's very difficult to find wedding suppliers when you're having a South Asian or an ethnic minority wedding. But actually, there's a secondary problem, which is communicating and collaborating with those suppliers. So a lot of suppliers and couples were saying their biggest pain point was things like receiving proposals, receiving contracts, payment schedules, and really the organization piece for it. So we knew that that was the next thing that we wanted to build in, which then goes into CRM software territory.
Oh, that's really interesting. I think that sometimes people, when you have a vision or an idea, you look for signals that align with that. So you're picking out, filtering out the things that don't align, yeah, and then ignoring everything that doesn't align with your original vision or what you thought was going to be the solution. And then did you find it difficult to accept that you needed to pivot your product?
Honestly, no. I think that's all part of being an entrepreneur, is that I would love to meet an entrepreneur who set out to do an idea and that's the idea that got them to where they wanted to be and achieve their goals. I think every founder I've ever spoken to or every founder podcast I've ever heard, they have had some sort of change in their journey. And I think it's the same as even when, say, you're in the corporate world and you're not an entrepreneur, you'll pivot on your career path as well. You might change industry, you might change teams, you might change your role. And it's all quite natural to pivot in different aspects of your life. But I think when you're a founder, you have a different level of attachment perhaps to what you have been building so far. And so I completely get why pivoting can feel like quite an emotional thing. For me, I probably had maybe a day where I thought, oh, why didn't that one work? But then you move on and you think, okay, if I want to achieve the desired goal and the outcome that I've been after, this is a necessary step to take. So you just turn it into business as usual.
Yeah, I think also, as long as you're still excited by what you're pivoting into, like the direction that you're moving in, then as long as you've got the motivation to continue on that journey, then yeah, I suppose all is fine. You can carry on. I think there are, there may be cases where potentially people realize they need to move and founders are no longer feeling excited about the change or that pivot that they're moving into, which is also fine. I think it's just important to look at the data and realize, is this something that I want to do?
I think it's exactly that. For me, I was really lucky that the pivot really boosted my motivation to a whole other level. Not that I stopped getting motivated, but you can see your numbers and everything plateauing ever so slightly. And then when you know you need to pivot and then you come up with a new strategy and a new game plan, that's actually just really exciting and it propels you into the next stage.
It would be great to understand a little bit more about how you as a founder have grown personally throughout this challenge.
Definitely grown thicker skin, because you need to. You're dealing with so many different people and you're supporting your own self and your own business, especially coming from a large corporation where you're slightly sheltered or cushioned and then suddenly being left to fend for your own, which sounds really dramatic, even though it's not that dramatic. But that's been the biggest change, is dealing directly with the customer and knowing that the end decision lies with me, and how I then choose to respond to that customer is actually really going off of what's our culture that we're building as a company. And so I think you grow a lot more of a thicker skin. You learn to detach a lot more. I think as much as I spoke about when we pivoted, I felt quite detached and wasn't as emotional about that decision. At the start of the journey, I was definitely very emotionally attached to the business, as I think every founder is. So you learn to detach and see your business as something which is really motivating, really important, but ultimately it is a job and you're there to make your decisions more practically than emotionally, which I think has been one of my biggest learnings and definitely something that has resonated with me more so in the second year of doing the business than the first, for sure.
And are there ways in which that you've surprised yourself throughout the journey?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's really funny, because often you might have a problem arise and then often the same problem may arise twice, but with kind of a very different front or covering. And I think realizing that the way I reacted to the problem in year one versus how I reacted to the problem in year two, which was probably calmer, quicker, solutionized instantly, I think that was a real turning point where I was like, oh, wow, pat on the back for me.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think as a solo founder, you're your own boss. And so there's no promotion. And yeah, within the, like, a corporate atmosphere, the promotions signal your growth in your career, whether it's at promotions or pay rises. It signals that you're doing well and you're achieving things. But for you as a founder, I suppose that whole, that signal that you're looking out for, is all markers, those traditional markers, are completely different.
Yeah, they are. And I think it's really easy to, again, then get caught up in the vanity metrics and the non-financial metrics and think, oh yeah, I've now got this many, this much traffic or this many followers on Instagram. And it's really easy to get caught up in that and use that as a metric of success when actually it's really not. So I think you're absolutely right. That self-motivation is a big piece of being a founder.
I love how you compared yourself to when you started to now and experiencing similar challenges and how you're able to overcome them. Can you give us an example of one of those times?
Oh, I think the biggest thing has been with tech. So now knowing that I have a support system, someone to rely on in the form of our tech advisor, there have been times probably in the last few months when we've been redoing our development, when something has happened where it's been like developers saying, actually, we can't do this and this isn't a feature that we can launch, or it's just not possible within this budget. I remember year one me would have panicked and been like, but this is the main piece of the project. We absolutely need to have it. And not that I would say that to them, but in my mind, I would get off a call and feel quite disheartened and think, oh no, and mildly lose faith in the product and think, oh, but will users really feel the absence of this and maybe it won't work, and you have a lot of self-doubt fit in. And I think now it's quite exciting because when we find out that something can't be done on day one, we're like, okay, we'll just add it to phase two and put it in launch for release in 2 to 3 months time, and this is how we'll position it with the audience and our marketing and our sales piece. And so it's nice to see that change in year one me, when you think the smallest of problems is going to be the biggest of issues, versus now where I'm like, okay, this problem's come up, let's solutionize. Is there a stopgap that we can use in the middle to fill that? And then you just move on to the next piece.
Great. So it sounds like you've found your feet in tech and you're able to navigate all the different scenarios that you have to deal with when you're...
Well, let's hope so. Let's knock on wood, hopefully it stays that way.
So the founder journey is full of highs and lows. I recently came across this graphic on LinkedIn where you had founder highs and the euphoria that you feel, and then it goes up, it goes down, and you basically want to die and bury your head in the sand, and then it goes back up and down, up and down. Yeah. How do you deal with that roller coaster?
Yeah, that's one, if you asked me this maybe a year ago, I wouldn't have been able to answer. I think it comes down to taking care of your personal well-being. And that's something that I'm a big advocate of. And it's one of our cultural values as well in the company, is wedding well-being, because weddings are also very heightened emotions where you have that roller coaster where you get really excited and then suddenly you get told you can't have a specific decorator in your budget, and then suddenly you go down and you think it's the end of the world. So for us as a business, wedding well-being is really important. For me as a founder, taking care of my personal well-being is really important. And that means prioritizing and doing the things that make me feel better. So whether it be, I'm not usually a gym goer. I know that a lot of founders are, and that's a great break for them. For me, I'm more of a journaler, or watch something that's my comfort show that I really enjoy, or take my dog on a walk, or just spend time with my loved ones. So there was definitely a point in the founder journey where I stopped doing all of those things, probably because, and I don't know if many other founders can relate to this, but if something's going wrong in the business and if you're overly attached to it, you can feel a sense of guilt of doing the things that you enjoy because you think, no, I need to be spending 24/7 on this business. And I think a lot of the time when we've listened to podcasts as well, you've heard the founders who are now exited of 30 years into their journey and whatever it may be, but they always talk about, yes, I was working 24/7, I lost friends, like I lost family, but I wouldn't change it. And I think that was probably quite a kind of like harsh opinion that I thought entrepreneurs had to be like. And then you realize, actually, no, entrepreneurs do need to balance their well-being. And I think now we're seeing a lot more of that on LinkedIn, which is really great.
So I'd love to dive a little bit more into the well-being aspect and what that looks like for you in your life as a founder at the stage that you're in now. The reason I'm asking is because I have asked other entrepreneurs before about their lifestyle. They mentioned, you know, a couple of years, you need to just stay up late till midnight. They stayed up till 3 a.m. for 6 months to launch their business. I'm wondering whether there is another, a more balanced way and still succeed. What did it look like for you? Did you do these all-nighters or were you up till late in the beginning?
I'm definitely a big advocate of there's a balance. In the beginning, definitely, especially when I was in the shift of switching through my full-time corporate role and then taking the business full-time, because that was the only time I could work on the business. Then as soon as I took the business full-time, I'm really lucky that I have parents who are very big on work-life balance. And so for them, as soon as I took the business full-time, they sat me down and they said, okay, you need to have a schedule and have a routine. It's fine because there's going to be days where you are going to have to work late, but it shouldn't need to be every day because your productivity will simply start to decline. And I think for the first few months, as everyone does, you don't listen to your parents. And I was like, no, it's fine. Like every founder does it.
Are they entrepreneurs themselves, just out of curiosity?
No, they're not, but they're very smart individuals. Okay. Yeah, they're just really smart and they're really good at balancing and they have that entrepreneurial mindset, which is great just through what they've seen or what they've experienced in their lives. So yeah, didn't listen to them for the first few months because no one listens to their parents initially. And then I came to the self-realization where I thought, actually, you know what? This isn't sustainable. My productivity is declining. There's no need for me to say I'm working these hours when actually if I worked fewer hours, I could probably be more efficient, get more done, and then do something that energizes me in a different way. And that's the journey that I followed. So for me, I'm a big believer in balance.
Same here. And I just thinking practically, when I think about, because sometimes I feel guilt for not working in the evenings and just resting. But what I've experienced is like the mental fatigue. Yeah. And I just realized that I do need some time every day to switch off. Mm-hmm. And then I'll just do much better the next day. So for me, it's going, I go to the gym in the mornings as for as many days of the week that I can because it just really sets me up. Yeah. I try and switch the scenery that I'm working in. So sometimes I'm in a cafe, sometimes up at the gym, in the gym lounge, and sometimes I'm at home, and that gives me like a nice variety of spaces to work in. And yeah, and then around, I have to be honest, I don't think after about 6 o'clock, I do switch off. And the most of the work that I'm doing right now is preparing this podcast during the week. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I just find that for me gives me the balance that I need to keep going. Because I don't think that if you don't have to, I understand out of necessity people work the hours that they do. And I think if you don't have to, then it's a good position to be in. You shouldn't force yourself out of guilt to work these grueling hours necessarily.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm someone who time blocks. So on a Sunday, I will set out my tasks for the week, know what I need to get done, what's a priority. And then the night before each working day, I'll time block to say, okay, what's my day going to look like? And I think that holds me accountable and makes me quite efficient. But then also means that I don't feel guilty when I switch off because I can see, okay, well, I've achieved everything I needed to achieve today. So that's fine because now this can wait till tomorrow. And it goes back to even when you work a corporate job, your to-do list is never ending. And when you're a founder, it's even longer. But then it's about switching off and doing the things that are going to re-energize you so that the next day you can finish that task, which would take you half an hour in half an hour, as opposed to an hour because you're slightly tired and you didn't sleep well the night before or anything of that sort.
Mm. Before we move away from the highs and lows of a founder and dealing with it emotionally, it would be great to get some examples of how you move past a moment that was low.
Yeah, I think for me, two things. One, I've been very lucky to have a really good support system around me, whether that be my family, whether that be my friends. And so they were really quick to recognize that I wasn't being myself. And so before I even went through the low in its entirety, they could probably see it brewing, which was really good and really precautionary. That being said, I did still go through a couple of lows. And I think for me, a big thing that got me out of that was actually meditation. I'm really big on meditating and journaling and writing down what I'm feeling. And so that really helped me to just let it all out, switch off for a bit, and then just start my day and do what needs to get done. And that kind of recentered me. Because yeah, I think everyone needs something that then gives them that adrenaline and energy back. And for me, it was really meditation.
And I don't, feel free to say no if you don't want to share exactly what that low is, but I thought it might help other founders if they know exactly what that low is, if you don't mind sharing. But you can always say no.
Yeah. No, for me, I think the low was when we had built our community, knew it was doing well and we were achieving a purpose, but knew that this wasn't the scalable model. So essentially, numbers looked great, the vanity metrics, but financial metrics weren't looking as great. Knew what needed to be done to an extent, but just didn't know how I was going to action all of that. And I think that was the biggest low, was feeling a bit stuck, because we have something out there that exists, that runs and is helpful. Then we have somewhere where we need to be, and really identifying that path and going on that journey. And for me, that included things like fundraising, which was something that I hadn't done before. A lot of the time when I started that fundraise, people had told me, oh, it's really difficult to fundraise when you're going through a pivot. Why don't you just launch your product first? And it's like, okay, but for that, we needed the money and we've been bootstrapped. And to speed up that process of launching, we need to fundraise. So it was kind of that cycle. So for me, there was a lot of newness around a new strategy, having to build out a new team and fundraising and still running our existing business. Because a lot of the time, people who are fundraising or starting a new business need to do the first three, but you don't have to continue business as usual for an existing business. And that felt like a lot at one point for me. And that was probably one of the business lows. But then things like meditating and getting my energy back in different ways meant that I set the right habits day in, day out, and then was able to get to the stage where we are now.
Great. Thank you so much for sharing that. What I'm hearing is that you're able to become more resilient when you know, like, how to take care of yourself. So you seem to have the tools that you need to move out of those lows.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that comes with experiencing them. And it's quite a cliche that to say you need to experience the lows to then appreciate the highs, but I do think that's really true. And to your point of resilience, I think it also helps you regulate. So now when I go through something which is either a big kind of downer or a big win, you regulate and your emotions are like this, as opposed to that kind of up and down, which is quite extreme.
Definitely. I think it's quite natural, and it's also so internal as well. Nobody around you knows what's going on, and you have to mentally get yourself out of this low. So you just need that mental resilience to recognize, oh no, I'm feeling down and I can do this. I can figure out how I'm going to get out of this challenge.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that's so important. I'm really big on affirmations. So I have personal affirmations for the day, and then I have business affirmations. And for those times where you're feeling slightly low or pessimistic about something, it's a really good reminder to look back at them and then just remember your purpose as well.
Wonderful. I did this coaching session, and I've not had many coaching sessions, but a few years ago before I started She Found, and it was that coaching session that helped me actually launch She Found. The lady that was coaching me, she recommended writing your affirmations on a big poster and putting them on the wall. So I had mine in my office just by my desk. So when I was just feeling those down moments, I would just look at them and read them, and I just feel so much more motivated.
Yeah. I think it's really nice, because I initially was very much not opposed to affirmations, but I didn't think they worked. But then now anytime I look at it, I just remember another version of me who is in different energy, a higher vibration, who was thinking these things, then telling me who's in a lower vibration, and it picks you up. So it makes you less reliant on things like external validation or anything as well, which I think is really important as a solo founder.
Great. So I would love to hear a little bit more about where you are now on your journey. What does it look like right now?
So at the moment, at the time of filming, we're actually due to relaunch our product, which is really exciting, because now we're entering the software space, completely new business model, new branding refresh, new audiences, pivoting out of the South Asian space and going more mainstream but multicultural friendly as a lens. So that's where we currently are, is working on our new product.
fantastic. And you're about to relaunch. I guess, will you still have the same users, or are you looking for a new end user?
So we would definitely still have the same suppliers. The couples would hopefully be married by then. Or they're in the midst of their journey and we'd be getting new couples. And that's a really exciting thing about our business, is that it's nice because we have our B2B suppliers and wedding professionals who are just always with us. They love the product, they're sticky, and we speak to them quite regularly. And that's quite a constant form of contact that we have. But then on the flip side, we have couples who are constantly getting engaged or married, and then we're seeing their wedding pictures come out. And so it's really nice to go through that journey with them.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. I suppose there's this piece where you mentioned that you're going to take over some of the administrative logistics side of the wedding journey in terms of getting contract signed as well. So that means that because it's easier for the companies to use your software, you're automatically going to get users?
Absolutely. And so our business model really is quite circular. So our suppliers bring on our couples, and then our couples bring on new suppliers who maybe aren't already using Eternity to begin with. So our USP is to be a collaborative CRM. So it's quite a nice cycle that we follow to help
with them. Great. And what are you looking forward to in the future?
I think for me, I'm looking forward to getting more feedback on our product. That's the exciting thing. Once it's launched, actually see it come to fruition, see people use it and get that real-time feedback. That's been something that I've always loved in the past 2 years of our journey as well. Building out a team is a really exciting thing for me, because finding those like-minded individuals who understand your purpose and your vision and kind of want to grow it with you in the right way. Luckily, so far, we've been great to find people who've wanted to do exactly that and joined us on the journey. So that would be exciting. And then number three, I love marketing. I'm quite a creative person. So getting that creative freedom to rebrand and have a different brand voice and really find our space, whether it be on our socials or in-person activations, I'm really excited for that.
Any tips for our aspiring entrepreneurs or those at the early stage?
My tips that I always say are a couple. One is always take a calculated risk and do it. It's really easy to say, just do it and just go for it, but make sure it's a calculated risk and you know what you're doing, whether that be from a financial perspective or from the industry perspective, whatever it may be. And then number two would definitely be tap into that network. So even if you don't already have a business or you're just considering it, go to events where different founders are networking, because you never know what you will learn off of someone. And again, just grow that network to then be helpful later down the line.
Yes, I have been building my network, and especially through going to these networking events, just making sure when I'm there, I add everyone to LinkedIn and then drop them a message to say hi afterwards. And a lot of those founders now, I'm reaching out to invite them onto the podcast. So yeah, just constantly just building that network. You just never know when you're going to need somebody's help or when you could help them as well.
Yeah, no, exactly that. I think that's the really nice thing that I didn't know what to expect from the entrepreneur space or the founder space coming from a corporate background, but it's very welcoming and everyone's always there to support and help one another. So that would be something which I would always tell someone, is don't fear it, just go into it and embrace it.
Fantastic. All right. Are you ready for the lightning round?
Go for it.
Right. So the first question is one that I always like to ask. It's about resources. What kind of podcast or book have you read that might help people listening today?
For me, I think it's really important to find a podcast or a book which resonates to you. For me, the book that I really enjoyed was Karen Brady's Strong Women. I'm just really inspired by her journey and how she talks about her balance between her career, her family, her friends, her health. I think it goes back to our point that we were talking about having that balance and making sure that you're very aware of whether you are or aren't striking it. And so that's something that I really resonate with in her book. And I think a lot of people would say they probably admire Karen Brady as just a woman. So that would be a big one.
Fantastic. We can find the link and link it in our show notes for everybody.
Absolutely.
If you had one wish, what would that be?
Oh, business related? Or
I would like to open it up to life in general.
That is such a broad one. I think in life, it's going to sound so cliche, but it's just to enjoy and embrace life. And I think, okay, my wish would probably be to ensure that I always have the kind of strength and resilience to regulate myself through life and kind of maintain that balance between those different quarters and elements of life, whether it be your work, your family, your friends, your career, your health, is just to ensure that I have the right tools in my toolbox to have the right balance with them throughout whatever you do face.
Fantastic. What one piece of advice have you been given that served you well?
One that my parents always say, which is change creates opportunity. I think that's so important, because anytime you go through some sort of a change, whether you were looking for it or it was thrown upon you, it's really easy to go into a little bit of a panic. But just remembering, okay, no, change creates opportunity. Everything is happening for a reason, and there is good in this, and I'll only see it in hindsight. I think that is a piece of advice which helps me, again, through personal and through business life.
That needs to be turned into a quote and is plastered everywhere.
Yeah, absolutely.
Any final words? Where can people connect with you?
LinkedIn, Instagram. So either my name, I'm sure we can put links below to our business profiles as well as personal ones.
Great, thank you. So if you're getting married or know somebody that's getting married, please do check out Eternity.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for your time today. It's been a real pleasure hearing from you.
If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast episode today, please do hit the subscribe button and share this episode with like-minded connections. I'd also like to take this opportunity to let you know that I'm sharing knowledge on how to build tech products. If this sounds like something that's going to be helpful to you, please subscribe to the She Founds newsletter. The link will be in the show notes.